We'll begin with the first case on our day calendar, which is Carol Reiss, or R-E-I-S-S, versus Hernandez, number 19-3325.
Good afternoon. This is Brian Glass for Plaintiff Appellant Carol Reiss. This case is about the mosaic necessary to be painted to get to trial on an age discrimination case for a New York City public school teacher. Ms. Reiss was almost a 40-year veteran of the DOE until she decided to resign in July of 2016 under threat that she was going to get brought up on disciplinary charges that almost certainly would lead to her termination given the way the double ineffective standard was created. So Ms. Reiss, I did not represent Ms. Reiss below. She was represented by, she was pro se, but she had the help of Cravath, Swain, and Moore and NILAG. And it does appear that they really presented all the elements that would typically get a case to trial in this area. I mean, the courts have, this court has looked at this standard a number of times. And for discrimination, retaliation, and constructive discharge, it appears that Ms. Reiss met the elements of each of these things to at least get to a fact finder or a jury trial. And if I could just walk you through it briefly, on the discrimination claim, it's quite common that the court will look at verbal comments suggesting age discrimination. And in this case, there were three different comments made to Ms. Reiss by the principal of her school, who happened to be much younger. The AP was in her 30s. Ms. Reiss was in her 60s at the time they were made, suggesting age discrimination. You don't get that in that many cases. And this is, these are more than just stray remarks, not just one comment, but three separate comments in the context of observations and evaluations. The second thing the courts often look at are comparators, similarly situated comparators.
Counsel, when you say three, are two of them remarks that referred to her experience that should have prompted her to handle herself differently rather than a numerical age comment?
Well, I do believe they referred to her experience, but they also referred to retirement or the consideration of retirement. I mean, these comments, why is she making any comments of that nature in the first place is this question, and one was very strict.
But do you think it's inappropriate for someone to say, as someone with as much experience as you have, should be doing her job better? Is that inappropriate?
I think under the context of what she was facing, you know, you have to look at the circumstances of what she had been facing for the last 2 years and the manner in which it's said. You know, is the word old used? Is the word 63 used? But I think in the context of what the whole situation, I think, it could be under the right circumstances, and I think coupled with the other comments, I think there's enough here to proceed.
Okay.
On the comparator aspect, you know, she was the only gym teacher at the school. This is a K-8 school. She's the only gym teacher. So when the court asks to draw inferences to similarly situated people, she doesn't have a gym teacher to compare herself to, but she did list several teachers who had received poor ratings and got tenured or became deans at the school. And she actually listed about 24 other older teachers who were sort of forced out or treated hostily by this principal. So you have the, you know, the best you can do with comparators when you only have one gym teacher, you're somewhat limited in what you can do, but it does appear that she's listed a number of older teachers who were sort of forced out, as well as two younger teachers who received poor ratings, but did fine. And one of the tricks in this case that we believe the board pulled in this case is that the ineffective rating has special consequences. There was a standard called HEDI, highly effective, effective, developing, ineffective. If you look at the data closely, none of the younger teachers got ineffective overall for the year. And what made this so dangerous for Ms. Reiss in this case was that this double ineffective standard had recently been created by the state, where if you got two ineffectives in a row, the burden of proof shifted on you to prove your competence and made it very, very easy to terminate teachers. And that's why she actually left the system, because she was being told by her union people that two ineffectives was essentially automatic termination. And so, sorry, my mic goes off. So that's the second element that, and again, these are younger administrators who never taught phys ed, who never even had been involved in phys ed curriculum, were rating her poorly here. So you have that second element that usually meets the standard for these cases. And then you get into the pretext element about legitimate business reasons. So the board in these cases use observations and letters to file. Now, for someone who was effective, even very effective with this teacher overall, I mean, with this principal the first year, and effective every year in her career, and actually had been a curriculum developer, all of a sudden to get all ineffectives, and observations by a 30-year-old AP who never taught gym before, it was her first job, raises some red flags about how legitimate these observations were. She basically could do nothing right after this new administration came on, and that had real consequences to her when she got the double ineffective, as Judge Pauly even recognized. You know, once you get that second ineffective, you can't do per session work that's pensionable, such as summer school, the CHAMPS basketball program.
Mr. Glass, thank you very much. I've given you a little extra time, but you've reserved 3 minutes rebuttal, and okay. It's time for us to hear from Ms. Jerome.
Sure. Good afternoon, Your Honors. I represent Ms. Hernandez, Ms. Johnson, and the Department of Education. The plaintiff was formally observed by 4 different administrators, 2 of whom are not even named as defendants or having harbored any animus, and all 4 noted serious, similar deficiencies in plaintiff's teaching. All 4 gave her ineffective ratings. And her claims fail for a multitude of reasons. With respect to discrimination, first, we don't concede there was a prima facie case made, certainly with respect to the individuals, and even as to the Department of Education, there's no inference of discrimination. But even if there were a prima facie case made, Reese's poor teaching and poor student management were the cause of her ineffective ratings. And Reese fails to show pretext. She cannot and does not show that the reviews were false. And she utterly fails to show that age was the but-for cause of her ineffective ratings when her 4 different administrators all observed the similar deficiencies. As to her constructive discharge claim, when this court has noted it's quite a high burden for a plaintiff, it fails as a matter of law. Getting negative performance reviews simply does not an intolerable workplace make. And Reese's argument, her being fired was a foregone conclusion, fails for several reasons. First, the statute still is permissive. It is not mandatory that the DOE bring charges against her. No 3020A was brought against her. Even if a 30A were to be brought against her, it's an impartial arbitrator, and there's no foregone result that the DOE wins every time. Reese cannot prove otherwise. And Reese even admitted there was a colleague who got ineffective ratings and never had a 3020A commenced against him. Moreover, Reese never even bothered to appeal her second ineffective rating internally, which she could have done and which she did do after her first ineffective rating for the 2015-2016 school year, 2014-2015. As for retaliation, there is no but-for causal nexus, and this claim also fails as a matter of law. First, Reese cannot show that anything Ms. Hernandez said was knowingly false. Ms. Reese was a gym teacher. She was not a professional developer. And there's also the fact that Ms. Reese's application was denied for 2 and additional separate reasons. Ms. Reese, the state found, misrepresented her educational background and failed to sign a verification page. Those are 2 independent reasons that have nothing to do with Ms. Hernandez's statement, which again, Ms. Reese fails to show was false. So there's no damage or harm to Ms. Reese from this alleged retaliation. And of course, there's the no causal nexus demonstrated whatsoever. With respect to some of the things my adversary said, the court is correct that the two comments that for which there was any evidence related to Ms. Reese's experience and to the fact that she was applying for a different position, and it came in the context of that, and there is no linkage whatsoever of those comments to the ineffective pedagogy that was observed by the four different teachers.
Excuse me, what does a professional developer do? What specifically are those responsibilities?
I believe that's not elaborated on the record, Your Honor. Believe Ms. Reese put it capital P, capital D, professional developer, down on her application to the state for the charter school. And Ms. Hernandez, when asked what was Ms. Reese's role at PS 123, which was the only thing that Ms. Hernandez knew about, was that she was a gym teacher and not a professional developer. And the evidence that Ms. Reese cites in her brief to support that somehow Ms. Hernandez, quote, ratified, unquote, some sporadic, perhaps, guidance or training that she gave, there's no evidence in the record that supports this so-called ratification. So, again, undermining any idea that Ms. Hernandez stated anything false.
Can we go back a moment to the question of the principal, Ms. Hernandez, having stated that Reese had been a gym teacher at PS 123. Now, that was a true statement, right?
Right.
Is it your view that a true statement can't constitute an adverse employment action for purposes of Reese's retaliation claim?
I don't want to venture into a blanket conclusion, Your Honor. Certainly in this case, with a state charter school agency asking, was Ms. Reese a gym teacher? And that truthful statement, yes, that cannot be retaliation.
But I guess what I was aiming at.
Brian Glass.
Join the meeting.
Somebody has joined the meeting, whatever that means. So truth, you're not claiming that truth is an absolute defense to a claim of retaliation, but that it is a defense to this claim of retaliation.
Yes. Yes. And in addition, there's the second independent piece about the other grounds on which her charter school application was denied for the 11th time, that had nothing to do with anything Ms. Hernandez said or didn't say.
So
and there was no harm then that she would have, the application would have been denied anyway. Yes, Your Honor.
Going back to this defense to a claim of retaliation, do we have authority in our circuit for the proposition that truth may be an absolute defense or is an absolute defense to a claim of retaliation?
I cannot, unfortunately, conjure up any sites at this time, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
That's fine. All right. Do my colleagues have any questions for Mr. Jerome?
I do not.
Judge Parker?
No.
All right. So maybe you have a couple of minutes to wrap up. Tell us what your strongest case is and what we should bear in mind.
I'm sorry. Is that still me? Thank you.
I see you. Yes. Yes.
Forgive me.
You have a couple of minutes.
Okay. Yes. Forgive me. So the strongest, with respect to discrimination, the strongest piece of information is the fact that there are four evaluators who observed her 10 times over 2 years and two of them are not defendants, and they all found the same deficiencies in her pedagogy.
And do we know why the others are not defendants? I mean, that's a question for Mr. Glass, but do you have any idea?
I do not know, Your Honor. Okay. In fact, one of them, it's not that these other two did one observation each. One of them actually did three observations, so his view weighed in significantly. So there's no pretext, because the fact that she couldn't do procession was based on her poor pedagogy. Age was not the but-for cause of her poor pedagogy and or leading to the ineffective ratings. The second, with respect to constructive discharge, is just the possibility of being fired does not constitute an intolerable workplace under the cases in this circuit. And in any event, her firing was not a foregone conclusion. And as to retaliation, again, there is no causal nexus. And separately, there was no, there was an independent reason why she would have not had her charter school granted. Thank you
very much, Ms. Trump.
Thank you.
Mr. Glass, you've reserved 3 minutes. Mr. Glass.
Yes.
Mr. Glass, are you there? Hold on a second. Hold on a second. Hold on a second. Mr. Glass. Will somebody get a hold of Mr. Glass and tell him that?
Yes, Judge. I'm going to look right now. Just give me 1 second, Judge. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Yes, sir. Your Honor, can you hear me? Because unfortunately, my internet connection seems to have gone down. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, it appears that after I finished speaking, the internet connection at the WeWork suite I'm in froze. So I really did not hear everything, but I could just sum up briefly. If you could hear me clearly.
Go ahead.
Personally, I don't think you could see me, but, yes, first with the four administrators that they keep stressing, you do need to understand, Your Honors, that it's Ms. Hernandez who is in control of the school and hired these administrators. I do think they were actually all named in Ms. Reese's original charge or EEOC charge, if you see that in the record. I believe that the counsel that helped her, Cravath or NILAG, decided that it was probably best to just focus on the two main administrators. So I think that's why it happened. But they were named at some point. And those three administrators are all clearly under the wing of Ms. Hernandez. And I think there's even something in the record to suggest that Ms. Hernandez put pressure on one of those administrators to lower one of her ratings. So, you know, the fact that the board, you know, this all looks, you know, how do you get rid of a teacher? You try to paper the file. You have to look at the file, you know, logically. Would anyone believe that a 40-year teacher who teaches phys ed is all of a sudden incompetent and gets all ineffective in every category? It just doesn't make any sense. And that's the problem with these cases, is that the board is very good at, you know, they have a game plan. They draw a strategy of how to doctor someone's file. And the double ineffective was orchestrated to get rid of teachers who got too ineffective that was at the control of the principal. So they're basically gutting tenure. And this idea that they weren't going to bring charges is ridiculous, because there were two ineffectives that she received. And if you look at the history of double ineffectives at the DOE, it's virtual termination. So the fact that she walked at that point to try to preserve, you know, her career and get into a charter school should not be something that should surprise anyone. And again, the context of that charter school truth, it's how you say it, obviously, right? She had been a professional developer. She had actually been part of Bloomberg administration, local instructional superintendent. This principal is well aware of her ability to, you know, to be a professional developer. And the way you say, and now she's accused of misleading, you know, and falsifying this documentation. So, and that was the reason that this charter school application was denied. So again, you have to look at the record closely and understand the context. And that's why it's mosaic, and words like pretext and mosaic are very subjective. And it's really sort of in the eye of the beholder. So, you know, you have to look a little beyond the documentation and just use your logic here. And I submit that this is a case that has more than enough evidence to meet all the criteria to at least put this in front of a jury instead of one district judge to decide Mrs. Reese's claims in this case. Okay, thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much, Mr. Glass. We'll reserve decision in 19-3325.